I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Time to take KSL outdoors. This is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
It is time for hour number two, and the final one, of course, every week for KSL Outdoors Radio, and always a pleasure to have you with us. Let me just give you a rundown of what's still to come this morning, because in just a few minutes, about 20 minutes away, we're going to be checking in with the guys, Bob and Mark, from the One Tank Trip with Bob and Mark from the website, of course, Road Tripping. But first, and we're going to talk about fall drives, by the way, and I also want to pick Mark's brain a little bit about the drone technology that's out there, because he shoots some fantastic video that is available on that website. But we'll look forward to that conversation before we wrap up. Jared Winkler will also join us about Brighton passes that are available. Jared, of course, from Brighton Ski Resort. Getting close as the weather starts to turn. The colors are changing up in the mountains, and there's some cooler air that has finally arrived here to the Wasatch Front. Navadomskis is still with us there in Kaysville, eating lunch, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely correct, Tim. Got some vegetarian lasagna going here.
Ooh, all right. And I always appreciate, and it's not lost on me, that you skip lunch, or at least make some sacrifices on your lunch hour to do this every week. I appreciate it.
You know, it's better than getting up at 5 a.m. and driving to Salt Lake.
Well, that might be true, too, on Saturday mornings. I may struggle to get you back in the studio once they let us all back in.
I can't wait to see you, frankly. You're not going to have a problem with that.
All right. And Russ Smith, fingers crossed, still with us in Sugar House, or Stumpville, as it's being called now.
Yes, I just got back in the seat here.
All right, good. There was some question whether you were going to be there or not. I want to get right into our conversation with Wyatt Bubach. He is Captain Wyatt Bubach from the Division of Wildlife Resources and has been with us before. But, Wyatt, just before we jump into our conversation here, remind our listeners what your duties are there at the division.
So I oversee all the statewide operations, so all the field duties, the enforcement tasks, and all those items is what I oversee.
Faith Jolly reached out to me and thought it would be a good idea with the fall big game hunts underway to just run through some things that people usually get themselves in trouble doing. Many of these things, I just scratch my head and I say, you know, you shouldn't have to tell people this, but at the same time, if somebody has an inkling to try one of these things, they're going to get themselves in a whole lot of trouble. Like, close the gates behind you. I don't know that that's a legal thing, but you could be causing some problems for a property owner.
Yeah, that's as much of a courtesy as anything, or whatever these cattle allotments or sheep allotments have. They'll leave gates open and or closed for a reason. So if they're open, leave them open. If they're closed, please close them behind you to help these ranchers out as they move cattle and sheep around.
Which, of course, gets us into a spot where we talk about being on private property and the fact that you need to know where you're hunting, but also get written permission from a landowner if you're going to be on that property for just about anything.
Yeah, certainly. It's you wouldn't want anybody walking in your backyard unless they talk to you about it. Private landowners, there's mixed opinions on that with the hunting public and public in general, but But the reality of it is private lands in Utah provide a lot of habitat forage and a lot of habitat shelter for wildlife throughout the state. So however you view it, that's up to you, but they do prove and provide a very important resource for our wildlife in the state. So please be courteous, because they do us well.
Is that a problem mostly with upland? I mean, we talk about it all the time with upland game, but is it also a problem with big game hunters?
Yeah, it certainly is. I'd say that it's equally or as big of a problem with big game hunters, just because in the mountains you have to have signage and up to kind of post your private property, and sometimes that can be a little bit more difficult to see. But yeah, it's a routine yearly, if not daily, thing during the peak of the big game hunting season that we're trying to help educate the public on private property regulations and how to gain access to those areas legally.
Is the walk-in access program something that works for big game, or is that primarily used for upland game?
No, that's a good point, Tim. Yeah, walk-in access, a quick summary of what that is basically the Division of Wildlife pays a private property owner to allow access onto that property, and that property owner determines what they want to allow, whether that's fishing, hunting, trapping, small game, big game. And so on our division website, if you go into the walk-in access page there, you can find a walk-in access near you. Click on it. We have a map of where they're all at, and it'll tell you what they allow on that property, just so you're not engaging in an activity that the landowner doesn't want on there. Yeah. But that's a super cool program that's got sportsmen access to a lot of property we didn't have historically.
Yeah, and Navi, we talk a lot, or have in the past anyway, about private property and the challenges it causes for fishermen in some areas here in the state.
You know, it blows my mind, Tim, that people aren't closing the gates. They should understand that it is a privilege to have a landowner allow you on their property, and you should go out of your way to be respectful. It makes no sense. So we built some walkover steps along the Weber River so people would go over the barbed wire and not ruin the fence for the rancher. More importantly, not pop your waders.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, Wyatt, is just the cost for the landowner. Here they're trying to do something nice and end up having to pay out of pocket for silly things that people are doing, while they're there.
Yeah, litter would be another big concern that we try to encourage people not to leave anything in there, because that would be a concern of mine if I was a landowner, of how much litter is going to end up on my property from allowing the public on. So.
We mentioned the walk-in access program, which is easily found at wildlife.utah.gov, but I want to make sure that hunters also know about this hunt planner that is on the website, because, scouting the areas is important, but knowing the area boundaries probably gets people in more trouble than just about anything.
Yeah, we've kind of gone to that hunt planner for about everything information-wise as far as hunt boundaries and things like that goes. So that's quite similar to that walk-in access map. You go to the hunt or the hunt planner. You can select the species that you wanted to hunt, the unit that you're hunting, and they'll pull it up on a digital map there that you can click on, give you all the details about how much private, how much public's in there, what the terrain's like, the season dates, things of that nature. So for people just getting into the game or trying to learn more about the areas that they're hunting, we certainly point them to that hunt planner real heavily, because it contains about all the information that you'll need for the unit that you're hunting.
With all the increases in side-by-sides and the popularity of the rides on trails, and Russ, you and I certainly saw this firsthand when we were doing our border-to-border ride on ATVs for a full week or 10 days, whatever it was. So many times you see tracks that go off of a very nice trail for no particular reason or no clear reason why they would do it, but that gets people in trouble.
Yeah, that for me, I don't know why, it's disappointing for me, probably more so than about anything that I deal with, is we have these resources. There's trail maps that will be put out by the agency in which governs that land, and I'm sure Parks and Recs have a trail map system for pretty much the whole state, but yeah, you see it regularly where people just drive off the road because they don't want to walk, whether that's hunting or otherwise. It's habitat damage that's done year round. It's not just tied to hunters.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring up habitat damage. At this point, we're not talking about private property. We're just talking about harming Mother Nature. And the other thing is, if it happens too much, you are ruining the opportunities for everybody else that loves to go out there and do it the right way.
Yeah, trails will end up getting shut down. You lose vegetation. You create erosion issues. You get those long streaks down steep hills that don't have any vegetation when you go over them a whole bunch of time illegally on a side-by-side or ATV. And when it rains or snows, all that runoff just starts deteriorating that entire hillside. So please stick to those designated trails that are actually open. When in doubt, don't go and consult with a map.
Yeah. How much of a problem is misidentifying the animal that you're hunting?
Surprisingly larger than you would think. Part of that's due to carelessness or excitement that's in the moment, and others can be attributed to just a new hunter being out there that isn't really super familiar with what they're hunting. But every year, yesterday, we had someone shoot an elk on a deer tag. We have moose shot on elk tags. And so it's routine. We just ask that if you are new, jump online, do some research of what your animal looks like, where they usually are found, types of terrains, places like that, and just be super certain of what you're shooting at. It's would be similar to if you're shooting around houses, you wouldn't shoot at something that if you knew you missed was going to hit a house. It's no different with game. If you're not sure that your shot's going to hit what you're actually intending to hunt, let's take a second, reassess, and make sure that we're not shooting something on accident.
Yeah,
it's hard to believe, Tim, that somebody would misidentify an elk for a deer or a moose for an elk. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, you had the same thought I had, and that may be that they didn't have a clear view of it, and they were just wanting to get a shot off.
No, they wanted to kill it, and then they're just saying that they didn't know what they were doing. Well, it's ridiculous.
I don't know. I mean, Captain, you tell me, how many times does a moose get misidentified as an elk?
So there are times, probably the more common than not is when you get a young bull, or it doesn't necessarily have to be a young bull, but a bull that doesn't have much palmation on his antlers, just has more tine than palm. And when those get moving through the thick timber and you're just seeing a beam with tines coming off, it can look comparable to an elk. Granted, the color's not real similar, and the size is, I guess, relatively similar. But when you see those tines and just you have a very small opening moving through the pines and you're not super careful about what you're shooting, it happens routinely.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say necessarily the moose for an elk, but that is not uncommon. It happens, you know, every year, every couple of years, we have moose shot accidentally.
And they're just shooting at something moving. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and in the excitement of the moment, it goes back to the thing of accurately identifying the animal you're hunting. Give it another 10 seconds, or even if it takes, you know, 5 minutes, let that animal move to the point where you can make a clear identification. Just a couple of things, because we've got to wrap up here. Be respectful of a law enforcement officer that's doing some checking in the field. That seems to go, you know, basic. Show respect for your teacher if you're Navadomskis. Show respect for the police officer that pulls you over. Show respect to the boss if you're at work. Unfortunately, there seems to be a loss in some of that in our society these days. And the other one is, if you're going to be on an ATV or an OHV, you still have to mind all of the DUI laws that are out there. Isn't that right, Captain?
Yes, sir. We wouldn't expect anything less. We want everybody out there to have a good time, be safe, and enjoy whatever it is they're doing in the outdoors. So if we can make sure we're obeying all the laws doing so, that is what we're seeking.
And by the way, you can report a poacher, too, on wildlife.utah.gov. You can search that out if you just go to that website. So many great things to study on, make your hunt planner. Check that walk-in access, all available at wildlife.utah.gov. Captain Wyatt Bubach, thanks for your time again today.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, we will check in with the boys from Road Trippin'. It's Bob and Mark. And, boy, we're going to try and give you some ideas on some great places to see fall color. It's really going to be popping here in the next couple of weeks, so stay with us.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
It is time for our one tank trip of the week. And if you're going to try and catch all of these places, you're going to need more than a tank in your car. But our guess is you're going to pick one of these great places to see some fall colors. And there are some fantastic fall drives that are, I'm sure, close to wherever you might be listening right now. But to help us sort it out, the guys from Road Trippin' with Bob and Mark, it's Bob Grove and Mark Wade who join us, I think, and we're not going to tell anybody stories here. You guys are sitting in the back of the car after a flat tire in somebody's parking lot right now, aren't you?
It's true. It's true. We're in Richfield, Utah. We're on our way to another destination to go to shoot some pictures and video, and that's where we are right now in the back of a parking lot because we're waiting for a tire to be fixed.
Heck of a place to lose a cow.
Yeah, we're close to that.
I wish.
Anyway, I don't know where the picture was that, Bob, you posted on your social media of some fall color with a little lake or pond in the background. But, boy, that was spectacular. That got me in the mood for our conversation today.
Yeah, that I think that's the photo that we've taken just recently.
Yeah.
Up in the Tusher Mountains near Kent's Lake. I think it was called Birch Lake. I'm not sure, but it was up in that area. And it was really wonderful. We were a little worried about going up there this week because they had a fire in the Tushers a bit earlier in the week, but they got a handle on it and cleared the way for us. And boy, I tell you, the colors are looking really nice up high.
Well, you guys are coming in loud and clear. There is a little bit of a delay, so I'm just going to warn our listeners that there may be some pauses in our conversation, which is expected considering where you're at the moment. I'm going to let you guys just talk back and forth about the top 10 list and maybe one or two of the honorable mentions that you've got on your website, which is Road Tripping with Bob and Mark, knowing that in the next couple of weeks, many of these areas are going to peak. People should also know that with very dry and hot conditions, some of the colors are not going to be quite as vibrant, I don't think, as they have been in years past. And some of these are going to turn fairly quickly, I would guess. At least that's what the experts are telling us.
Yeah, I think once you get a hard freeze, things start transitioning fairly quickly. I think in the highest elevations, we're going to see those leaves go pretty quickly. They'll change and drop. If you get a good wind, that'll make it go even faster. So, but what we're seeing is in the middle sections, some really nice color coming out right now with the scrub oak and a little higher than that than the aspens. But we're starting to see it transition a little more quickly than I have in the past. Normally, the last week of September, first week of October is when most everything peaks in the high country. But from what it looks like throughout the western region, it's happening a little quicker this year, and it's probably because we've had such as, you know, I'm not sure exactly what caused it. We have these long spells of no precipitation and heat. That might have something to do with it.
Yeah, and obviously, if you get leaf scorch, that's going to because of the heat and lack of water, that's going to change things quite a bit. Mark, let's do this. Let's start with number 10 on your top 10 and work our way to number 1.
All right, you're going to have to read those off to us.
All right, Big and Little Cottonwood Canyons come in at number 10.
Well, that's, you know, obviously for Salt Lake City, that's prime country. And I used to live at the mouth of Big Cottonwood Canyon, and we would, back in the day, Tim, we used to step out onto 70th South and stick our thumb out and get a ride up to the ski resorts. But
yeah.
Now it's, you know, those are the two prime easy candidates right there in the Salt Lake Valley. We'll talk about one other location. Immigration Canyon is actually in our second tier of 10. It could be in the top 10 easily.
Yeah.
But those are beautiful canyons to just go explore, and it's an up and back drive, and we right now would be the time to get up there.
Becky and I had dinner at Snowbird with some friends last week,
and the colors were just starting to change down at the bottom, the lower part of the canyon. Huntsville to Monte Cristo is another pretty one. It comes in at number 9.
Yeah, this, in fact, we might as well just talk about all those up in Ogden Valley.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the sweet spots for leaf peeping is Ogden Valley, beginning with Ogden Canyon. From Ogden up to Pine View is a really beautiful stretch of leaves, as anyone would know who's driven through there. Then once you get up into the Eden-Huntsville area, if you go around, circumnavigate Pine View over to the south, you can hook up to the old Snow Basin Road. I don't know if you remember that road or not, because most people get to Snow Basin now off of Trapper's Loop, but you take the old Snow Basin Road from just south of the reservoir. That's a long, winding mountain road that just goes through a kaleidoscope of color.
Yeah.
Just really an awesome drive. Then, of course, the Huntsville to Monte Cristo, which is a popular area for snowmobiling during the winter months, but that's also a wonderful fall drive.
Right. Old Snow Basin Road, by the way, is number 6 on your top 10. All-American Road, Scenic Byway 12. We've talked about that drive that, of course, you so enjoy when you're making your way to Bryce Canyon. That came in at number 8. The Patchwork Parkway National Scenic Byway. I'm not familiar with this one. SR-143?
That one you'd pick up from Panguitch, from the city of Panguitch, or from Cedar City, either way. Or Parowan actually would be the connecting town, I would say. And then you're going to come in from Parowan and go up the mountain, and you're going to go from about 6,000 feet up over 10, even close to 11,000 feet up in that area. And the leaves at those different zones are going to be changing right now. And so that one's really Parowan to Panguitch, Scenic Byway 143.
Boy, and riding mountain bikes this time of year underneath canopied trails with a little of the leaves having fallen on the trail, you almost feel like you're floating going through. It reminds me, it's the mountain bike version of skiing on fresh powder.
It is. I mean, I remember in Bountiful, where I used to live, of going in the Mueller Park area up on top and the mountain bike trails there. It's very nice. I mean, they get that. And at Bryanhead, where I used to live also, it's like you mentioned, you know, it just kind of coats the trails with those leaves. I was going to mention on that Patchwork, from a good recommendation for that road is when you're up at the junction at Cedar Breaks, Highway 143 becomes 148 in Cedar Breaks, and then it continues to Ping, which is 143. From that point, from that junction down, probably about 5-6 miles or so, or when those are the sweet spots
okay.
for the leaves. You'll find some really amazing leaves there.
All right, we've got to take a break. We'll hold off on the top 5. We'll get through them pretty quickly because I still have questions about drone usage that I promised one of our listeners I would address with Mark. So stand by, guys. Don't leave the parking lot. Grab yourself a drink, and we'll reconnect with you coming up as we finish out the program. But we've got a news update coming up next, so stay right there.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.